Blog Talk Radio.
From the Regis Suites in Phoenix, Arizona. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I'm Dave Isaac, the host of Breakthrough Thinking. And if it is the second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4, it's Understanding Autism, starring none other than Paul Loudon, all the way from Houston, Texas, and Kimberly Isaac. Guys, welcome back again.
Thank you.
Always happy to be here, Dave.
It's always nice. And we just had a nice show, People of Games, starring Paul Loudon. Well, that was really good. We want to make sure everyone listens to that every second Tuesday from 2 to 3. Very enjoyable. Enjoyed that tremendously. Go to breakradioshow.com, hear it on the archives, and then I know you'll probably have it up on your website as well. So, Kimberly, you have a special guest today.
I do. I have Caitlin, are you there?
I am.
Okay, I just want to make sure you were there. I'm going to introduce you. We have Caitlin Watson. And she is the Clinical Services Manager of Hope Group here in Phoenix. And today she is going to talk about applied behavior analysis, which people hear it commonly referred to as ABA. And we're just excited to have you, Caitlin. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So I was wondering, maybe before we start, if you could just tell people a little bit about yourself, your background, your experience, how you got into autism and ABA.
Okay. So I kind of have always been with individuals with disabilities. My mom was a retired special ed teacher, and so I have always kind of been in the field inadvertently through her. When I was going to college, I decided that I didn't want to go into the field and that I was going to be a probation officer or something like that. And so I did my bachelor's in sociology and with a concentration in criminology, and quickly figured out that that was definitely not the field for me. My senior year of college, I kind of fell into an internship doing adaptive physical education at a special needs preschool. And after I finished my internship there, I was hired on as a behavior technician with them. And it was really kind of cool because our the person who oversaw the program that I was working in is Dr. Mark Sundberg. He's very prominent in the field of autism and ABA and verbal behavior. And so I got to work real close with him, and he did lots of training with us on how do we implement the programs in the school and how do we teach language and things like that. I was also working in recreation at the time, and so I was developing programs for preschool age kiddos, you know, typical as well as, you know, those with special needs to join into and get kind of a, you know, modified sports. We called it the mini sports program, so everything was miniaturized. I left California. I came here to Arizona, where I started providing rehabilitation services in families' homes through Hope Group. And at that time, I decided that I wanted to get more education, and so I went on to get my master's in special ed and a positive behavior support certificate. And so now I'm at Hope Group full-time. I'm a program manager as well as the clinical services manager, so I'm in the office part of my time, and then a program manager, I design and implement programs and train families and providers, mostly in our early intervention programs.
That's so great. I want to just ask you real quick, I know this show, people listen to it worldwide, but if you could just briefly tell people what Hope Group is, because I know there are agencies in other areas too, they're just called something different, but the services that Hope Group provides, can you just explain a little bit about that?
Absolutely. We provide rehabilitation and respite as kind of our biggest, and it's through state services, so through the Department of Developmental Disabilities. We also provide insurance services through private insurance companies. We do private consultation. We've got BCBAs, board certified behavior analysts on staff. We provide parent training, but really, you know, kind of how Hope Group got started was providing DDD services, Department of Developmental Services, for habilitation and respite to families, which is going into the homes and working on the individual's goals that, you know, the family has decided are important things for them to learn for success in their future.
That's so great. So today, thank you for sharing all of that. I'm so excited to have you. Obviously, you're a friend of mine, and I very much respect you as a professional and clinician, and I'm excited to have you talk about applied behavior analysis, ABA. And so maybe just to start, you could just explain to us, what is ABA?
So ABA it's the science of behavior, and most of us refer to it as ABA, but like you said, it's applied behavior analysis, and it's really just looking at, you know, the science of human behavior. And we're really looking, when we're talking about ABA, we're talking about socially significant behaviors. So we're talking about behaviors that are socially significant to that individual. Everything's obviously individualized for that person. And when you're looking at ABA, it's looking at, you know, what causes these behaviors to occur. If it's a desired behavior, how do we make that increase? If it's, you know, disruptive behavior, or behavior that, you know, we want to kind of shape into something else, how do we decrease that behavior? ABA really looks at taking a structure. We have a basic structure that is used to teach different skills or new skills. So a behavior that we want to see increase, we would use those basic principles and apply them to the behavior and, you know, see the increase or decrease of whatever that behavior may be.
So in order to develop, you know, an ABA program, what would be the first thing that an ABA therapist would do?
So typically our first step is look over whatever the parents are, have for us, so any diagnoses or any notes from schools and things like that when we're developing a program. You can learn a whole lot very quickly in reading some of those reports, but also the first piece is really doing an assessment on the child and or the individual and figuring out where they're at. At Hope Group, we use the ABLES and the VB map. They're both, you know, similar assessments, kind of touch on different skills, anywhere from, you know, receptive language, expressive language, all the way to gross and fine motor, dressing, grooming, all of that stuff. So we would, for our early intervention kids, for sure we would run an assessment to kind of see where they're at.
So is this assessment, I'm familiar with the ABLES, but can you just explain, is that a developmental assessment? What areas would you, I mean, you said a little bit like self-care, receptive language. I mean, is it a developmental assessment, or tell us a little bit more about that.
So the ABLES, it's not broken down into developmental milestones, but it is based on what a typical child should be doing, and the ABLE goes until about 7 years of age. But it doesn't break down each skill. Like if I'm looking at an expressive communication skill, it's not going to tell me, like, this child should be doing this between 18 and 24 months. It's going to kind of just go through the entire assessment. The VB map, which is the verbal behavior assessment, that one does break down based on developmental milestones. So it goes like 0 to 18 months, 18 to 24, et cetera.
Oh, okay. So what would, you know, a home program actually look like? So you've done the assessment, and, you know, you have areas that you've identified that the child needs help with. You know, how would this get set up? What would be the next step?
So most of our kids are in Arizona's early intervention program. And so basically we go in and we do the assessment. We take back any materials that we can get our hands on from speech or physical therapist or from school, from the doctor that diagnosed them, and we go back and we write a report. And then we look in the report, so what is this child's abilities, and then what are some things that, you know, we would like to see this child, you know, work on or improve in. And so we would write goals based on the assessment in the areas where there's deficits. And then we would we develop a program binder where there's data collection. Most of us use anywhere from 5 to 10 trial data collection, so it's 10 trials on each skill that we're trying to teach each time that there's a therapist there. So some of them get run many times a day, depending on how many therapists they have there for that day. And then the program manager comes in and kind of oversees the program, trains the family, trains the providers on how to implement those goals, how to take the data, and all of that. And it's for Arizona's early intervention, it's a 2-year program where there's oversight for 2 years over the families and the providers, and that's kind of how it all gets started.
Okay. What can you explain a little bit about what a drill looks like, or what an example of a goal and how you would work on it?
So let's see. See, for example, you have a goal of we'll either sign or verbally request an item or something like that. So it would be, you know, for a kiddo who is not requesting the things that they want. Maybe they're just kind of falling on the floor and crying and pointing and things like that. Depending on where the child's at, it would either be, you know, to sign it, to use a picture communication system, or to verbally request those things. And so implementing a goal like that, just depending on where the child's at, you know, if we're doing a picture exchange system, you know, you might have the picture present and we're hand over hand prompting them to give the picture, and then in exchange for giving the picture, they receive the item. So if it's a picture of a cookie, they give us the picture of a cookie and we give them a cookie in exchange. That's just an example of some of the stuff we do.
Okay. So so you mentioned that, you know, a behavior analyst, a BCBA, would come in and, you know, set up these goals and monitor the program. But who actually implements the program? You mentioned something about you can train family members and therapists. I mean, can anybody be involved in conducting therapy with the child, or is there specifics to that?
Really, anybody, you know, can implement the therapy. You know, here in Arizona, you know, our direct therapists that are typically in our homes under state services, you know, they're typically people who are, you know, just out of high school or going to college. You know, typically, you know, for us at Hope Group, it's people who are looking to grow into the field, so they're gaining the experience and things like that. But really, you know, anybody can be trained to implement this child's program. Sometimes we have kids that spend, you know, after school hours with grandma and grandpa, and so we go and train grandma and grandpa to make sure that everybody across the board, you know, working on those skills in the same way.
Do the schools implement the home programming as well?
Some schools. I always push parents to take the home program with them to their IEP meetings and to show the school and say, this is what we're working on at home. Is there a way that we can, you know, write some goals here at school that are going to kind of cross over so that we're all, you know, working on those same skills, and it's not just schools working on this and we're working on this and it's completely separate. So, you know, unfortunately with the way the program's set up, you know, we can't really go into the schools and kind of work on some of that stuff, but all of my families, I strongly encourage them to, you know, really communicate with the school what they're working on at home. A lot of the things, you know, can be incorporated into academics and things like that so that there's that across-the-board coverage for those skills.
That sounds great. I know it's important to have you know, the whole team supportive of the things that the child's working on. So I'm glad to hear that it is really a team approach. So we're actually going to take a short break, and when we come back, I have more questions for Caitlin about ABA therapy. And we'll be right back.
Thanks.
Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.riiadvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism radio show. And we're so excited. I'm Kim Isaac, by the way. We don't introduce ourselves anymore. I just realized I'm Kim Isaac. I'm a co-host of this show. And I have with me Paul Loudon.
I'm here.
And we also have Dave Isaac, the host of and creator of Breakthrough Thinking. And so we're here, and we have our special guest, Caitlin Watson. She is the Clinical Services Manager of Hope Group here in Arizona. And today we're talking about Applied Behavior Analysis, ABA. And actually, we have Dave has a question for you, Caitlin, that he thought of during the break.
Hi, Caitlin. Okay. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Oh, good. Here's a. Oh, I'm great. Thank you so much. And thank you for being on Understanding Autism. It provides a great service for listeners and parents of people on the spectrum. We really appreciate that. And the question I have for listeners that may just have tuned in may not understand some of the implications and terminology of autism is, when you talk about behaviors, how would you describe that? When I think of behaviors, I think about what someone does, sort of the what. It answers the questions, what do they do? I also get the impression you think of it as skill sets. Is that correct? And how would you describe behaviors?
So the easiest way to think about a behavior when you're looking at applied behavior analysis, it's anything a person says or does. So it can be anything, really. So we think about, you know, behaviors as hitting the wall, but we also think about, you know, behaviors of talking and things like that as behaviors as well.
And that makes sense to me, absolutely. And the follow-up question to that is behaviors are generated from somewhere, and usually from what I could tell is probably the unconscious mind, but there's motivation, I believe, or maybe I should ask it this way. Do you ever look at the motivation behind the behavior? And that's sort of interesting to me. What's your take on that?
Absolutely. The science of ABA, it's actually, it can get quite complicated when you really get into the whole science of it, but we do look at motivation. We look at things like satiation and deprivation, which will adjust your motivation to do certain things. So if I just ate a humongous lunch and someone's offering me a bowl of ice cream, my motivation for that bowl of ice cream is going to look different because my stomach's full, I don't really feel like eating, so I'm probably not going to ask or really want to participate in eating ice cream. And the same goes for deprivation of, you know, somebody who, you know, hasn't eaten in 3 days and they get offered a sandwich, you know, their motivation for that sandwich is going to look a lot different.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I mean, that gives our listeners some insights into what that means and a lot about your concept probably with ABA, Applied Behavior Analysis. Kim, back to you.
Yeah, no, that's
actually,
helpful.
I had a question real quick.
Oh, Paul has a question.
Tying into autism, you talk about motivation. You know, Applied Behavior Analysis is the study of behavior in people. How is it different when treating the behaviors of someone autistic and trying to change them versus treating the behaviors of someone who's neurotypical and trying to change them?
The same basic principles apply. We use, you know, shaping. We chain different behaviors together. We provide reinforcement for those behaviors. It's really the same basic principles that we're looking at applying to anybody when you're looking at the science of ABA. So it really, the basic principles really stay the same. There are studies going on actually with dolphins right now. There's a school in Florida who's, you know, using the principles of ABA to train animals. They use the principles of ABA, you know, how do we prevent or get people to understand, you know, AIDS and how do we go about AIDS prevention. There's people that use ABA for weight loss programs. There's businesses that use it for business management. It's really those same basic principles that kind of are going to cover everybody, whether they have a disability or not.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Pretty much, Paul? Thanks, Caitlin. It's good for me to hear this. I mean, I've been in the field for a long time, and I'm familiar with ABA, but it's so good to have kind of the formal refresher. So I'm wondering, too, I mean, what kind of progress can people expect from an ABA program?
You know, we see amazing results with, you know, our kids that we work with. When I started doing rehabilitation with a little girl and family, I started with her. She was just over 18 months, and she was completely nonverbal. And now she just started, you know, going to kindergarten, completely mainstreamed into, you know, a gen ed classroom, and she's talking galore and all those kind of things. You know, I think there's, you know, multiple things that play into how effective a treatment is. You know, you're looking at consistency of therapy, you know, looking at, you know, how devoted are the parents, because it's time consuming. Our kids in our early intervention programs get 25 to 40 hours a week of direct one-on-one therapy, on top of the expectation from us as program managers is that the parents are going to implement working on these goals when, you know, those therapists go home at the end of the night. It's huge devotion on the parents' part, as well as, you know, a lot of our kids that we work with. You know, I've got several kids on my caseload that have, you know, seizures or other disabilities that are kind of, you know, in the mix as well. And so I think all of those factors play a role in how successful a program can be, but, you know, it's proven to be very effective to reduce inappropriate behaviors, to increase communication, increase learning skills, and to teach appropriate social behavior.
And is ABA something that is, I guess the word I'd use is permanent, where you graduate from one step to the next, to the next, to the next, to the eventual nothing ongoing, or is it a system where you see backsliding unless there's some sort of maintenance procedure going on to keep someone from falling back to old behaviors?
Most of our kids, it's a constant progression. There are, you know, like I said, you know, some kids, you know, I've got a couple kids that have uncontrolled seizure disorders, and so typically as a result of having a couple weeks of, you know, really yucky seizures, we kind of see a loss in some of those skills, and then the skills are regained. But typically it's a steady progression. We are using that assessment tool. We're mastering them out of skills. Most of us set up a maintenance section of their program so that, okay, I mastered you out of, you know, using pronouns, but it's something that we're going to go back to, you know, once a week or twice a week, just to make sure those skills are maintaining.
So when you said you have the parents follow through, do the parents actually do the formal drills, or do they follow through in just more of a general lifestyle way?
So it's kind of a combination of both. A lot of people, when they think about ABA or applied behavior analysis, they think of sitting at a table and doing picture cards or doing trial after trial. There's a variety of ways to implement it. Most of my home programs, I think I only have one kid who is like sitting down at a table and doing drove, as most people typically think of it. Most of the program is natural environment teaching. And so these things come up in the natural environment, and we teach in the natural environment as these things occur.
Okay. Well, you know, it looks like we're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Caitlin Watson, talking about applied behavior analysis as a therapeutic treatment for people on the autism spectrum. And we'll be right back.
Birenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs And if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism Radio Show. I'm Kim Isaac. I'm a co-host of this radio show, and I'm here with Paul.
Hi.
And we have Caitlin on the line, Caitlin Watson. She's the Clinical Services Manager of Hope Group. And today we're talking about Applied Behavior Analysis, ABA, and as a therapy for children on the autism spectrum. And actually, I just said the word children, and that kind of leads into my next question. Is ABA specifically for children, or is it effective for people of all ages?
It is effective for people of all ages. We have some people who they go through our, we offer training classes and stuff, they go through our training classes and they're like, I'm going to use that on my husband. And that kind of thing. We do find that the earlier intervention, the kids who get between 25 and 40 hours of the early intervention starting at either prior to or at the age of 3, they have the most significant gains. But it's not to say that it can't be used on a 12-year-old or 18-year-old or anything like that.
Okay. Now, I kind of want to ask, these are some questions that that actually some people had emailed me when I told them we were going to do an ABA show. And I know over the years, as with all autism therapies, you know, they've evolved over the years. And a lot of people have associated some negative attributes to ABA in terms of negative reinforcement and things like that. I mean, I know that that's not how ABA is done now. I know people refer back to the Lovaas method and, you know, the treatment of the children and things like that. I mean, what can you tell people about the methods of ABA in terms of, you know, do you use negative reinforcement? Is it all positive? How is it supposed to be done so that people out there know, you know, what they should be looking for if their therapist comes in and, you know, attempts certain kinds of negative type things? You know, what do people need to know about that?
So in the actual science of ABA, there are punishment procedures involved. However, it's not like punishment like we think of, like, oh, we want you to stop sucking your thumb, so we're going to pour hot sauce on your finger kind of thing. But most states have, you know, laws against those things. In the state of Arizona, we have Article 9, and Article 9 protects the individuals that get services from us. And so, you know, there's no timeout procedures, there's no seclusion, and none of that kind of stuff protected by the law.
Things that they used to do, right? Are those things that used to be happening, and that's why the laws came into effect?
Yeah. Article 9 specifically came into effect. There was actually a school in Florida, or not a school, like an institution in Florida, and Geraldo Rivera did an episode of, I think it was 60 Minutes, on this school and just really exposed absolutely horrific things that were going on to not only people with autism, but, and you know, anybody with a disability that was placed in this school. And so that really got the federal government saying, okay, we need to put something in place to protect these individuals who sometimes can't speak up for themselves and can't communicate that. And so that's where the law Article 9 came out. Arizona, actually, every single state in the United States has a law similar to Article 9. Each state differs of what their law is. Arizona actually has one of the strictest laws in the country, which is, you know, good for us because we got our people pretty well protected. But really, the biggest thing that, you know, we use in our programs in the homes is positive reinforcement. So we're providing reinforcement for behaviors that we want to see, desired behaviors, and we're ignoring or giving very little feedback to behaviors that are less desirable that we don't want to see. And very quickly that connection comes of, okay, I did this and I received this, so maybe I should keep doing that because I like the outcome of it. So it could be, you know, you have a kid who hits all the time and goes up to another child and give them a high five, and maybe you provide 10 minutes of computer time as a result of the displaying the appropriate behavior of, you know, giving a high five instead of hitting. That connection of, you know, they want to see me give more high fives and they want to see less of me smacking somebody kind of thing quickly becomes a part of that kid's or child's repertoire of skills, and they start to figure that piece out. Another thing too is we also use negative reinforcement, and a lot of people think negative, they think putting in time out or going in the corner, and actually negative reinforcement is when a child or a person gets to escape or avoid doing a task. And so we often provide negative reinforcement for a child who has escaped behaviors, when you give them a task to do, they run up to the room instead of doing it. And a good example of this would be if you have a child who has a chore of emptying the dishwasher, and I say, okay, we're done with dinner. Time for you to empty the dishwasher. And they get up and they go and they empty the entire top rack of the dishwasher. And I walk over to them and I say, wow, you did such a good job emptying the top of the dishwasher. I'll do the rest for you. So it's negative reinforcement. They're escaping the rest of their work. And so that's a very effective tool as well. And we do use positive and negative reinforcement, but not negative as in the way that most people
like
think abusive, about negative.
Right. Yeah, when I came into the field long ago, almost 17 years ago, there was some of that going on. And at first it was just scary and concerning. And I thought, okay, thank goodness for the evolution of everything when it comes to autism. Because I remember a time where negative was actually negative, really
uh-huh.
negative, like kids being squirted with water bottles. I actually witnessed some of that. I always refused. I never, ever would agree to do any of that in the programs that I was working in. But I'm really glad to know that things have been clearly defined and, you know, and evolved. You know, some people wonder, though, and this is true of any therapy, and I get asked this a lot, you know, with RDI, too. Are there risks with being involved in ABA? I mean, could it hurt a child?
Yeah, and
not physically. I'm sorry, not physically. Like psychologically is what I mean.
Oh, there's. I mean, I think with anything that you do, there's always you always have to weigh, you know, the advantages versus the risks involved. There are, you know, some kids that, you know, we've had to discontinue services with because the risk of the therapist showing up at the house caused such extreme behaviors that, like, the cost-benefit ratio was severely off. We had a kid who, you know, for whatever reason, had some escape behaviors. We were working with him, and every time that person would show up, he would run out the front door. Well, the cost-benefit ratio there, we're not really getting anything accomplished, as well as we've now put him in more harm than we're doing any good at that
right.
point. And so, it, you know, all of us, if you're a board-certified behavior analyst, you have to follow the ethical code of conduct. And that's not just for BCBAs. We all follow it. But BCBAs are bound, you know, by law to follow it. But that's one of the ethical codes of conduct is, you know, looking at the cost-benefit ratio of every program that we walk into and are the risks going to, you know, provide better treatment and a positive outcome for this child, or is it going to be the opposite? And if it's the opposite, then we need to refer them to something else that's going to be able to help them.
Right. Well, you know, I'm wondering, too, talking about, you know, BCBAs and following codes of ethics, I mean, what qualifications should parents be looking for in their therapist? You know, I mean, can anybody teach ABA or perform, you know, conduct ABA without special qualifications and training? How does that process go a little bit?
So it's kind of scary because some people will come out and say that, yes, you know, I'm trained in ABA and, you know, they might have been trained in ABA for dogs, like so every
oh, I see.
When you're
okay.
looking at, because the science of ABA covers pretty much everything, everybody kind of has their own little expertise. So I would tell a parent, if they're looking to have someone come in their home, you know, what experience do you have with autism? You know, can you tell me a little bit about your training with individuals with autism or things like that, and really looking you know, at the autism piece. Because
right.
You can have a BCBA who's a board certified behavior analyst, but they're all their training was in something totally different.
Oh,
and so
okay.
It's really looking at that experience. And then the direct therapist, because most BCBAs, they do more oversight than direct therapy. Not all of them, but for the most part, and so for your direct therapist, really looking at, you know, what kind of trainings have you taken? You know, Hope Group, we require all our providers to go through basic ABA training as well as a couple other trainings that are kind of fall into the ABA process. But asking questions like that, are you willing to go get training and those kinds
right.
of things?
Yeah,
really
no, those are really important questions. Yeah, and I'm glad we're talking about that, because sometimes I think parents are so, you know, afraid or in chaos, they just want to get something done. So we're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about applied behavior analysis, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
At Birenbaum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum & Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heitzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Welcome back to Breakthrough Thinking's Understanding Autism. I am Kim Isaac. I'm a co-host of this show. I'm here with co-host Paul Loudon.
Hi.
And we have Caitlin on the air through the phone, our great guest, Caitlin Watson. And we're talking today about applied behavior analysis. And so far, Caitlin, it's been so, the things that you've shared, I think, have been just really helpful in organizing, you know, thoughts about ABA and its purposes and just what it looks like. And I'm wondering, you know, for listeners out there, you know, who are considering different kinds of therapies or maybe involved with multiple therapies, is ABA, you know, compatible with other therapies? Do you have to just do ABA or can it be integrated into like a package of therapies?
It can definitely be integrated into, you know, we have a lot of our families are doing multiple therapies. I have some families who are doing research studies through ASU. You know, it can be integrated into, you know, anything that anybody really wants it to be, because it's really looking at, you know, those behaviors and those basic principles that can be applied across the board.
Do you find actually that some therapies are complementary to ABA?
Yeah, some, it kind of just depends. I mean, almost all of our kids get, you know, occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy. Some of them get music therapy. All of those, definitely, we all kind of have our little expertise and we can all work together, you know, to make a really comprehensive program for the child. The research type therapies and studies, you know, it's really hard to say because it is research, and so, you know, it just depends on the kiddo and how they respond and what kind of things that they're doing. I have, you know, quite a few kids that are doing the diet, or ASU was doing a study where, like, it was like a year long, but it incorporated, like, part of a diet and part of, it was, like, bath.
Yeah, right.
Multi-treatment
study.
Yeah. And so, you know, with the science of ABA, we, you know, stick, you know, pretty much to our science. We don't recommend any of those kind of other experimental type treatments. Mm-hmm. That is one thing with ABA is you, you know, somebody who's following our ethical code of conduct and things like that is anything of those experimental type, you know, other therapies should not be recommended.
Right.
Because it is experimental.
So what happens after an ABA program? So somebody is tested out of the ABLES and graduated, I guess. ABA, what happens after that?
So, you know, most of our kids still receive services through the state. They still get habilitation and respite. The kind of idea behind, especially the early intervention program, is that you've had 2 years of some pretty good, solid, you know, training, and you kind of know the system and how it works and all that stuff. It's, you know, it hopes that, you know, when you travel down the road, you know, maybe without as much support, you kind of have an idea of what you're doing already and things like that. You know, Hope Group provides private consultation and things like that where parents can pay for someone to come in and, you know, do more of the oversight and things like that. I'm sure, as you guys know, our insurance companies are starting to be mandated to cover ABA therapy, which typically with ABA therapy through an insurance company, it has to be done by a BCBA. And then they have therapists that are underneath them, and the therapists that are underneath them are people who have bachelor's or master's degrees and people who have kind of more formal training in ABA. When you're looking at the insurance side, when you're looking at the state services, I'm a program manager. I'm not a board-certified behavior analyst, so I have somebody who's a board-certified behavior analyst who supervises my work as well. And then your therapists, when you're in the state programs, like I said, are, you know, people right out of high school or people who are still going through their college career and figuring out what they want to do.
So I'm wondering, you're here in Phoenix. Oh, we have just about 4 minutes left in the show. But I just wanted, for people who are listening who aren't in Arizona, is there a website that people can look up to research ABA programs or, you know, agencies in their area?
Really just going to Google and typing in applied behavior analysis. If you type in ABA, some different things come up. But if you type in applied behavior analysis in New York or whatever, typically you'll get kind of a list of agencies and stuff like that. Autism Speaks is always a good site that has a lot of references on there. There's a BCBA whose name's Behavior Babe, and she's got a pretty detailed website as well to provide a lot of information and resources out to families.
Okay, and as far as people who are here in Phoenix, could they contact you via Hope Group or Hope Group's website? Can you share some information for our Phoenix people?
Absolutely. Anyone here in the Phoenix area, you can go to our website, hopegroupaz.com, and there's a contact us. It gets sent to our main receptionist, and she'll send your question out to whichever one of us is going to be able to best answer your question for you. Or you can always call. We've got up on our website, we offer about 30-plus training classes each month. There's, you know, a small fee for people who aren't, families or providers for us, but you can take any of our training classes. We've got webinars, all kinds of stuff, and that's hopegroupaz.com.
Okay, thank you so much, Caitlin. This has been so helpful. I really appreciate you taking time to share your knowledge and experience with us today. I hope that we can have you back at some point. I know we want to get Diana on the show, too. Maybe we could do a group thing, a group show. So, all right, well, thank you so much. And actually, before we end the show today, Paul, you want to talk about our website just a little bit?
Yeah, I just wanted to let listeners know that we have a website now at understanding-autism.info. And on that site, we will announce upcoming events where we might be found. Our podcast will start being available over the coming weeks or month, hopefully. You'll find galleries and forums you can have discussions on and blog posts from Kim and I. So we'd love to ask our community out there to come to our new website and start asking us questions or helping each other out as you've got questions for each other, and we'd love to hear from you.
Yes, absolutely, and be sure to check out our Facebook page as well. And, Caitlin, again, thank you so much. It's been really, really helpful. Really appreciate it. Okay, and so we will see everybody again next month, second Monday and second Tuesday. And we're going to prepare for shows, so stay tuned on our Facebook. We'll post what our topics are going to be. We're going to do some planning. And everybody have a great night.